Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
The Survivor Specialists, Phil and Blake, are back. And today we have our first episode of Digging Deeper. We are joined by Tony Squares to discuss the premiere of Survivor 49. And wouldn't you know it, must be the first episode because my screen absolutely just froze as soon as we started. Nothing like this was going on as I was talking to Tony and Blake before we went live. So I'm going to dip out real quick, get my camera to fix itself, and I'll be right back. Tony, why don't you introduce yourself and say what's going on?
Absolutely. I'll fill for time. That's perfect. My name is Tony Squares. If this is the first time you're seeing me, it's the first time I'm diving in to the world of Survivor. I came from the world of sports. I came from making comedy stuff on TikTok and on Instagram. And my friends told me after making a few videos covering the traitors, I decided to dive into Survivor. Season 48 was the first season I've watched live. And then I started watching all of the seasons leading up to season 50, starting at one and going to it. Just finished my season 25 breakdown that's coming out Saturday. And now that we're at season 49, I have my own YouTube channel all dedicated to Survivor. It's called Survivor Squared. Go check it out. Our episode for episode one comes out tomorrow. But pumped to be here to talk about it with veterans of the covering Survivor game. Yes. So I'm excited to get to the boat here.
I'm excited to hear your take on this. So in terms of how you've been going through it, have you been watching the New Era seasons then? Have you seen them all or just 48?
My first one was 48. I did go and see, I don't remember what one it was, but the one that Jam Jam wins because I was told to go watch that one. So those are the only two New Era seasons.
Start with the best two, yeah.
That's what people tell me. I don't know. And then it's I just finished Philippines 25 and I started Karamoan 2 days ago. So that's where I'm at on the on the rewatch.
Gotcha. Yeah. We do a series for our patrons called Every Season Matters, and we've been suffering through the bad portion. We have One World coming out soon. We're doing South Pacific's what's being released now, and then One World coming soon. So it's a tough stretch, man. If you could get through that, you can pretty much get through any of Survivor. It does get better after Karamoan, I promise you. So just keep on going. But what did you think last night of the premiere? I'm excited to get both of your thoughts because Will and I talked about it to death. I'll start with Tony and then I'll let Blake because Blake's going to have like a 5-minute ramble. I know it's coming. So Tony, what did you think of the premiere?
Again, I'm interested to see your takes on it and also the online chatter that's been there because I got this from 48. People hated that season because they wanted it to be the old era of Survivor. And I'm sitting here as a newbie going, this is highly entertaining. I'm really enjoying myself. And the same thing happened with 49 for me. I've made power rankings. I've done so much research into these players for the first time ever, reading their interviews that they're giving, getting to know them before I actually see them on TV. So when I saw them on TV, I'm like, this is what I wanted. I like this this Jason kid. I love this Riz God kid. Who is this Matt dude with the dreadlocks? Like, I love introducing this. There are some things I didn't like. I don't think we need to have it be 2 hours anymore. I think that's too long of stalling and nothing going on. But there are some characters I really, truly enjoyed and some questionable decisions they've already made. So I had a blast. I thought the production quality was amazing. That Shipwreck Tribal Council looks phenomenal. And I'm excited for the next 14 weeks here.
So if you want to hear positivity, go check out Survivor Square, because Blake is about to just decimate this episode.
No. I would never. I think that's a very, like, that is the other side of the coin of, like, if 48, I think we've always said, like, whatever your first Survivor season is the one that you are going to just bring it all back to. So if somebody's first season is 48, and you're seeing these things of, like, how does it quite work? Oh, they go against each other. Then they all come at the end to vote for one of them to win. Oh, I do like the honor. If you hadn't been 25 years into honor versus lying versus, you're a meat shield alliance, or am I not allowed to win too? I think it is something where you're like, when you're hearing that novel concept for the first time, there is the novelty to it instead of, like, I've heard this before. And speaking of I've heard this before, it's 9 seasons in a row of, you won't believe it, I'm on the beach with Jeff. I think I do this every single time for premiere. It wasn't as bad this season, but I think the one thing that is pretty prevalent online, and I'll go ahead and add to it as well, it feels like we're watching 18 of the same type of fan, of player, of personality, of, like, is it, if we're going to, let's do some sports analogies, like, if we're going to have a big tush-push battle of, like, should we do it or not, are we going to ask 18 Eagles fans, or should we ask 18 different teams fans? And it feels like we have 18, what are they called, theater kid, camp counselor, coworker, neighbor energy, where you're like, are all of these, there's not a lot of Homer Simpsons on the show anymore. This is a bunch of Ned Flanders. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something where, what were we promised when we were watching Survivor? Nothing's promised except Jeff will be there. And, like, I think there's something to be said of, even our strongman is letting you know he's cool. He's cool with all this. And even our, I'm a newer player, I'm Riz God, like, I promise I'm the immigrant story, but I'm also the most, like, what is it called? Like, quirky of all time. Sage is saying, I like poop, and she's, like, farting or burping in her confessional. She has one confessional, and that's the one she's going to fart in. You're like, wait, who's mandating this? Who's directing this? Like, let's put the fart in. Like, what is going on? Somebody threw up on screen and we didn't, like, it's not that we need a warning, or I think 15 years ago we would have the sound in the background and it would be a very embarrassing moment and it'd be like, I'm so sorry. She also spit in someone's face. It's just like, it's, if this was the second season I saw of this show, I would be like, I guess I would be, like, very interested in these stories, but because it's 49 and sometimes you watch some other countries and sometimes you're watching other shows, to finish my thesis, I feel like there's better Survivor in the last year in a different country and there's better reality on different networks right now where, like, Survivor's fallen behind.
I love getting both of these takes right off the bat here on this first episode. And that's why, Tony, like, when I saw that you were starting the YouTube channel, I said, I want to reach out to him and get him on as early as possible, because with you doing the YouTube channel and being so fresh and not having seen every season, you're coming at it from a little bit more of a casual perspective, which I do think is something missing from the internet. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a positive way, because with 48 last season, I remember through, like, the first three episodes, up until Thomas went home, I was very much into it. And then all of a sudden, I started to get very bored by what I was watching. I felt like it was too repetitive. But then I text my parents, my uncle calls me. They're loving it. They're loving every second of it. And so, Tony, you're coming out of this being like, that was good. I'm into it. And Blake's over here saying, I've seen this so many times. And I do agree much more with Blake here after this premiere, But I do think it's kind of valuable to have that other perspective, because when we're, you know, always online and always talking about and to other Survivor fans and Survivor diehards and all that, you kind of lose the fact that there are people who just will sit down and love watching this pretty much no matter what, or this is what they want. So it's fun to find that nice balance here. And Tony and Blake, I'm just gonna let the two of you duel for the next 50 minutes. I'm just gonna sit here, you know?
I will agree with some of what Blake said, and the fact that, like, for instance, Sage, the farting, the burping, the I love poop, I'm ready for her to not be on my television screen anymore. There are definitely plenty of people in that cast that I am not a huge fan of. For me, though, I love the gameplay angle, and I also still am in that new casual fan where, like, when I see 18 people excited to be there on Survivor, I too would be excited to be there on Survivor. You guys are sick of that because you've seen it repetitive over and over again, and I get that point of view completely. As for season 48, I do understand that during it, it got repetitive and boring. I also am biased because I had Joe as my first pick in the Survivor Fantasy League I joined for the first time ever, so I was rooting for that man to keep on winning. No one should backstab him. Keep going, buddy. So I get that I'm a little bit biased in all that regards here. As for this season, though, I believe it gave me hope because I saw enough nuggets from guys like Jake doing the shoe bandit routine, from guys like Matt, who I called in the beginning as the villain of this season. There's something off with that dude. There is an evil side coming. And from guys or girls like Annie, who I just believe is a loose cannon ready to explode. And I saw enough nuggets there, knowing television as well as you guys do, that they're leaving us breadcrumbs for things are not what they seem with these people. We might not get a full villain that we used to get in seasons 1 through 25 that I've seen, but I do believe there are some characters here that have more than just one layer that we're seeing. Maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'll be disappointed, but I guess that's what I was looking for from an optimist glass half full view when I saw enough to entice me to see more, if that makes sense.
Well, and Will made that point last night. I know we had a couple comments on our recap where people were saying it feels like they were setting us up. There wasn't all that much excitement happening in the premiere, but it feels like they are setting us up for bigger payoffs later on. The problem with that is this is the premiere. This is when you're going to have the most eyeballs on the screen. And I think the people who have watched 41 through 49, it feels like most of the comments, and it's not everybody. There's some people who think I'm being too negative, which is generally where a lot of people fall with me. But I do feel that they're, like, most people at this point are feeling this just feels like the same thing for the ninth time. There's nothing new here. We're just going through the motions at this point. We're going to have a challenge at the beginning. They're going to try to fight after that to get tribe supplies. We're going to do an immunity challenge. Somebody's going to be voted out. A lot of the archetypes are the exact same. And so that's where, for me, when I was watching this one, I was waiting for drama. And for me, what it really did come down to was even Jake hiding the shoe feels like it's for fun. Give me somebody who really wants to burn holes in people's shoes again. Like, I need that kind of personality, because while I understand you don't want to put actual bad people on the show, they've had enough problems with that in the 30s, which, Tony, you're in for it. Get ready. But, like, there's enough people who played in the 30s who legitimately could have ended Survivor had things gone a little bit differently with how negative everything around them was.
Ben Browning wins his season.
Survivor. Well, that was season 19. But it's like when you look at how it could have gone, I'm not saying give me bad people, but I'm saying give me confrontational people. Like, give me the Stays of the world from Survivor 48. I'd much rather see six Stays running around on that island than 18 non-Stays running around on that island, because I do feel like you need, right now, you look at every tribe. We just did every tribe, all three of them last night. They all are so happy to be around each other. Like, Savannah says, Shannon, I'm not into this yoga thing. I'm over it. I don't like it. And then she turns around and says, now Shannon's my number one. No, I want the person who says, not only am I not into this yoga thing, I'm going to go out of my way to make sure this person is never remembered by the Survivor community because they've made my life a living hell for 3 days. I miss that. And I do think that's missing, because at the end of the day, whether it's reality TV, it's scripted TV, it's movies, it's all about conflict. There was no conflict last night, in my opinion.
Do you think, because of that, because you guys have seen it all and have been in this a lot longer than I have, do you think it's because there are too many people on the island that know Survivor. Because as you said, say last year, a lot of people really liked her because of how controversial she was. I despised her. I couldn't wait for her to get voted off of the island. It was my first time watching Survivor, and I didn't want a person that mean and disparaging to win anything. She didn't make the merge for a reason. People were trying to cut her from the get-go because they know it's not bringing the goat to the final three anymore, so they won't get any votes. It's, I don't want this person around anymore because she's mean. And do you think too many people are too smart now when they're on the island to say, I can't be my true self yet because I'll get voted off early?
So what's super interesting, Tony, is I'm not dogging you at all, but we have been talking about stuff like this for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And it's always cool to see a brand new person get hooked and be like, I'm ready to like, and it's like, I've talked about this when I was in high school, watching as a high schooler. Whenever I had a bit more time after I got out of college, I had this stuff 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then 48 brought up a lot of these old things of like, who's deserving, good, bad, or whatever. And it is kind of like, how many seasons of reality have you watched? Like, in, I don't know if you've watched other shows before, or maybe reality TV hasn't really been stuff that you've done, but like, you're gonna get over some of this pretty quickly as a viewer, or you could be one of those people that like, no, this is a very important thing for me. But like, I think it is something where, I hate to do sports all the time, but you're a sports guy. It's like, how could you cheer for that guy? Didn't he have a speeding record? It's like, I don't care about his speeding record. Like, I care that he catches two touchdowns and won me my fantasy game. Like, that's what I'm cheering for in a wide receiver. I don't care if he goes and talks to kids at the elementary schools or not. So like, I think it's very interesting of like, is the Say have a spot on Modern Survivor? Say was by far the most, not most interesting, but most focused on by Survivor in the pre-merge of a woman ever. And that was something where 2 years ago, Jeff was like, villains have no spot in the Modern Survivor. And everyone was like, are you kidding me? Are you whatever? Say is not a villain to herself. And I think that's an important thing. Mm-hmm. If you walk on a show and you go, I'm going to be a fan favorite, I'm going to be a villain, I'm going to be the sweetheart, you're too far gone. Like, I think, I don't know if you know about me, but I worked in casting, or work in casting, we'll see what happens, for like the past 13 years. And it is something where the more oblivious a cast person is, a Survivor player is, the more oblivious of why we like them as a production company, the better. And I think that's kind of fallen by the wayside, because in the first 7 seconds of the episode, we have Jason step out of line and go, just want to let you guys know, I don't know if this is pulling back the curtain too much, and nobody's stopping him. Jeff's not going, wait, what? They're putting this on the broadcast. I was an alternate. And what that means to me, if you're paying attention, is like, in this process, production didn't think I was good enough to be on the show, but they thought I'd be good enough to back up somebody. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a chip on my shoulder forever. That's going to be something you may use against me 3 weeks from now of like, Jason, you shouldn't even be on the show. Like, how did you get sent here to ruin my chances of tribal council, or you grab the idol right in front of me? Like, all this stuff is something that is jumping around in my head of watching this the 49th time of like, I the train just flew off the tracks there, but it is something where you're like, this matters to me currently, and maybe later it won't matter to you. Like, I think that's a thing that's funny to me of Say is going to be not one. She was a once in a lifetime thing for this show, but the people that have been watching longer were more like, this is what we want in Survivor than, oh my God, get her off.
The thing is, she felt like a breath of fresh air. I mean, you're going through the early 20s, Tony, right now, where there's too much negativity, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't want Nayanka on my screen. I don't want Colton on my screen. Abby Maria is fun for a period of time, but like, I don't need a lot of Abby Maria. I need the right amount of dosage of Abby Maria. The problem mm-hmm. is, into the 40s, it started to become everybody was just a little too positive. Everybody's a little too into it. And I think that's that, like, I know casting just got nominated for an Emmy and all of that. And obviously what happened with Joe and Eva last season, people really into, but having somebody like Say on the season also helps push it in the right direction. When I watched mm-hmm. this season, this feels like 18 people who would be friends with each other in real life. That's not how I want my reality TV to be. Like, I mean, you even think about back in season one, they put the gay man from Rhode Island on the same starting tribe as the retired Navy SEAL who was 72 years old and didn't like gay people. They did that on season one. They knew, they didn't expect them to become best friends, but they knew that there'd be something there. When I look at how these tribes were aligned, I sit there and say to myself, who was Annie supposed to fight with? In Nicole's exit press, she was talking about how Jake was really coming at her on this season and she could just not break down that wall. And she thinks she went home because of Jake. Why didn't we see more of Jake and Nicole not getting along? That's what this is about. We've seen the experience 49 times now. The experience can't be what's drawing us into the show. We need to be drawn mm-hmm. into the show by the relationships and the conflicts and everything like that. And I think that is what was missing from this first episode. And we'll have to see how that moves forward.
I have a question for Tony real quick too. And I'm gonna do a leading question because that's what I'm the best at. But like
right
whenever at. Jeff Probst explains how Survivor works in the first 5 minutes of the show, are you like, thank God he's doing that? Or are you like, can we get on with this, Jeff?
No, I'm not. I mean, I've watched now 27 seasons of the show. I know how most of it works.
Good. Yeah.
But I do understand, like, I'm getting into this now because I've been in the world of sports for a while and sports radio and doing shows and podcasts like that. And they have a saying, especially in the sports radio world, like, it doesn't matter how long you're on. But like even it doesn't matter how long you're on, doesn't matter what channel you're on, a third of your audience is from the last 6 months. So you're like, they don't know all the stories of you. They don't know how the sausage got made, how the band made it together. They just linked onto you last January and they're a fan ever since. So sometimes you do need that re-explainer of everything that's happening. Do I need to go through every step of the motion of how the challenge is going to be successful, especially when there's 17 moving parts in this challenge? No, not necessarily. But I understand that's part of the game, I guess. I mean, we still hear the rules of overtime every time the NFL goes to overtime, and I could recite those to you verbatim. They're always going to do that for the new viewer, you know?
That's because they've changed it 25 times in the last three seasons. I mean, you know. Okay. So I named this episode, Does Survivor Need Idols? So again, Tony's watched 48. He hasn't watched 47, 46, 45, but there's this big conversation going into 50. Jeff gave us the option. Do you want idols? Do you not want idols? And I've seen people make the argument that this episode was the most old school episode we've had in a very long time because there was no idols, no advantages, no conversation around it. Really. We really only heard them mention it with Annie and then that was it. So I have a counter argument to that already, but I do want to hear some thoughts here about, did you miss the idol conversation in this? Because Tony, you started this podcast by saying, I don't think it needs to be 2 hours anymore. That felt long. There have been 2 hour premieres in the new era that don't feel that long,
mm-hmm.
but without having idols and without having conflict, what were we left with? So what is your take? Do you, if somehow Survivor 50 was voted no idols, Did this episode just prove that that is bad?
Man, I'm torn because the first 10 or so seasons, I think the first idol is in Guatemala. So the first 10 or so seasons, I know idols eventually come to pass. I know these advantages because I've seen 48 eventually happen. Shot in the dark, haven't gotten to that first season. I think it's the stupidest thing in the world, but I know it exists now. And so those first 10 seasons, I'm watching it. And I do get kind of bored because there are definitely episodes where we know she's going home. No matter what in the world happens, this person's going home. She's been on the bottom for 7 weeks. They're finally going to vote her out. So I do like the idea that idols are necessary because they change things up. However, this first season when it was just them, or this first episode, I should say, when it was just them, just these 18 and just them trying to figure each other out, I truly enjoyed that there wasn't the suspicion of, oh man, Nicole has an idol in her pocket. Annie found one, so we can't touch her. We have to get it out. We have to split the vote. I think last season, Bianca lost her vote, stupidly told Cedric, and then suddenly Bianca's out when none of that episode was leading to it at all. So I'm a little bit torn in the fact that no idols all season can definitely get if you can figure out what's going to happen, predictive in a way. So idols lead to the unpredictiveness, but I did enjoy the freshness of not having it involved, at least at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Blake, what'd you think?
I think what I'm trying to say is not as negative as I can be, but like, I think they're taking feedback, and it feels like feedback that you're giving to somebody that's been in charge of you for a long time. Somebody older than you in your generational family tree of Jeff Probst has been doing this longer than you've been alive for most of these fans. When he started doing this, I was 10. So I think if you told your dad, hey, can we stop using as much jalapenos in the chili? Then he gives you his chili with no jalapenos. And you're like, dude, what the hell? And it's like, there's a happy medium. And I think when we were giving advice to Jeff Probst, he's like, here, damn, like, here you go. And then it's worse. And then we're like, wait, no, not. And then he's going to go, well, I gave you what you wanted and it was worse. Like, you guys are going to complain about anything. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that is so funny to me when you have 49 times 14 of like, go look at the best episodes of the show. Go look what people resonated with. How can we produce? How can we cast? How can we put our challenges? How can we twist our people to replicate some of those best episodes? Or we don't want to have the same show all over and over again, but it would be nice to, okay, do I need to hear about Capitol Hill a third time or a fourth time? Or if it's not going to matter because the Nicole vote is a slam dunk, hearing more about the bromance and the inner workings of that alliance, if it's not important for this first vote, can we talk about it in the second one? And then if there is a thing where we're starting off the second episode and they go like, actually, 2 days ago, mm-hmm. Sage found the idol with Riz God and they had to. Yeah. And you're just like, okay. So like, I think there's the thought process of, were we going to complain about no matter what happened? But I think there was a couple times where I like, I can't believe they're talking about this story beat for this character again.
Well, and I think that's where most of the complaints come from with idols and advantages is when the entire episode revolves around idols and advantages. Like, that's what we don't want. But I do think having idols in the show has almost become a segment of every episode, whether it's a big segment or a small segment. That conversation of, I'm going to look for one. Where is this person? What's going on? I feel like that needs to be in there. And I agree with Blake on, we don't need it all gone. And I've always been saying idols are so important to the show. Like, the golden era of Survivor is 15 to 20. Idols are so prevalent in every single one of those seasons, whether it's Amanda finding it and us not knowing, James going home with two, Russell finding them with no clues, Parvati's double idol play and Heroes Villains. These are so important to what was making the show amazing at that time. But what I want to get to here is I agree with Tony about the fact that it is a little refreshing to not just have the same thing over and over again, to hear the players having the conversations, feeling each other out. Where do I go here? Uli, I feel like they might've dropped the ball on the storytelling there because Juwan was so in, and then suddenly Juwan wasn't in. And now Savannah's talking in a different way. And the fire thing just didn't seem like it made the most sense there. I feel like they dropped the ball a little. But when people are saying that this feels old school, here's where my massive complaint and just total disagreement with that comes from. Old school Survivor was so much about the journey and not about the result. And so if you're trying to say before Idols, talking the first 10 seasons, those seasons were about, we're in Borneo, we're in Australia, we're in Africa, we're in Marquesas, we're in Thailand. Like, every single one of those seasons was, that first episode was, look at this place we are.
Mm-hmm. If my can't kids believe could we're see here. Me now.
Yeah, like, let's go make something happen. Let's get into the adventure of finding water, of finding this, of finding that. We need food. Oh, no. In whatever, Vanuatu, there's a dead person right there. Like, all of these things are so integral to what makes old school Survivor old school, right? That wasn't in this episode. This wasn't them figuring it out. This was, I'm here. So you've cut out a lot of what made old school have the charm of old school. So there's this weird thing that's happened in Survivor where, and I said this on 48, they made the show so much about the end result and not the journey that then when an episode is a journey episode with a predictable boot, it becomes kind of boring. And we saw that a lot with Star going home and Mary going home last season. Those were very frustrating episodes for people because they almost don't know how to tell the journey anymore. So when I look at this episode, I said, it's a lot about the journey, but the journey's not nearly as exciting as it was when it was actually old school Survivor.
Yeah. So. No, I get that. And I've noticed that. So frankly, I've noticed that in the recaps that I've been watching. I shouldn't say recaps, the versions of the show, the seasons that I've seen for the first time, but that you guys have all seen for decades now. When we get to One World, Philippines, all that stuff, like that journey of, oh my God, we're in this new country is really gone. And the uniqueness of each of those seasons starts to dissipate even then, I've noticed. And then now, 48, 49, what they say, starting at 40, it was all on the same beach. So it's like, they're at a resort now. It's not necessarily Survivor anymore. We're losing that actual survive function, at least watching it. So I enjoyed watching, seeing how that's happened. I enjoy seeing create people. How do they create a fire? How do these people figure out where to get food, get water, all that stuff? And that's definitely not a part of the show anymore. And I feel like they then have to fill it with, let's get more into the personalities and backstories of these people. When now, again, that's what I'm going to keep going back to. These 18 players know Survivor too well that their backstory is all going to be very similar, even though the specifics are different. They're all going to make you feel good for them. You know, this guy's losing his hearing. This guy's dad is losing his eyesight. This girl's fighting for her family, all this stuff. Like, it's all the same story beats, just told in a different way. So that's where the repetitiveness comes in to me. It's that we lost the setting angle of this whole entire thing. And that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah. And I really appreciate that because it's the, everybody's kind of got this underdog story. Jake comes out there. He's the shoe bandit. He's the Hulk running. They call him, he looks like the Incredible Hulk running. And yet he's still an underdog. Where are our top dogs? I say this all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, give me the Terry Dietz where nothing has ever gone wrong in his life. Give me that version of people. Like, that needs to be on the show. Even David last season, David gets on the show. David is this, you know, he is built the most, maybe the most built person in the history of the show. And it's, but man, like, I really wish that my girlfriend would come back to me and she's a princess and I need the money so that I can do this. Why are we making David a sob story? Make David Gaston, make him a little bit of an asshole. Like, let's do that. And I think that that's where, like, we don't need everybody to have some underdog. I'm playing for a bigger cause. Sometimes it can just be, I'm selfish. I got two kids. I want to put them through college. I'm out here for me, and I don't really care if I ruin everybody else's life while I'm here. Like, I kind of miss that a little bit. So that, I agree with the repetition there for sure.
Because we had two stories last night for Steven and Juwan of, you're a 30-something-year-old dude on Survivor, and how are you getting imposter syndrome? Mm-hmm. How are you getting into your head on day first 36 hours? Like, how are you... Oh, this isn't what I thought it would be. Like, how is it different than what you thought it would be? And how are you like, oh, is my whole tribe after me? And like, yes, they're saying that those are real emotions. We should be empathetic for that. But like, who are your favorite people of all time? Could you imagine Sandra giving an imposter syndrome confessional? Could you imagine Parvati not being confident in every single step of her way through a pre-merge? Like, I don't want to watch people that have more anxiety than I do. Yes, it was interesting the first time with Cochran. Like, we saw it with Andy. How are they looking at Andy as somebody that has super anxiety and being like, we need more of that instead of like, hey, can we try to avoid this? And I know you're going to talk a big game until you get on the island, but I'm not going to go on Survivor unless I have a couple, 2 years of experience of like, I've been training, I've been doing whatever, I've been pushing myself. And it doesn't feel like the people that are on the show right now are taking that kind of like, I'm going to make sure when I get on the show, I'm going to punch people in the mouth. Yeah. It feels like there's a lot of people that are getting punched in the mouth, not even by other people, just by circumstances. Or like, I do want to talk about the Alex versus Rizgod challenge or whatever in the middle of the show. I think I was so bored of that, of like, they're not winning because they're good. They're winning because it was like incompetency versus literally the worst performance ever. And you're just like, how, you can't put a puzzle together. What are you doing here? Earlier, Rizgod couldn't run. Like, I'm supposed to be empathetic and like rooting for these people, but why are you showing up to Survivor if you can't do a normal jigsaw puzzle on day one when you're not hungry, when you're not starving, you're not dilapidated, you're not pissed off, you're not, this is the best part of RizGod here, and he can't do the puzzle. And then he goes, raising that flag was just an iconic moment of Survivor. I'm so glad to be a part of it already. And you're just like, are you iconic? I mean, Nicholas Snyder, you're a hater. Like, you're in the-
Nick Snyder here with Blake is such a hater. RizGod is killing it.
RizGod did not kill the premiere.
RizGod's coming out of that premiere as by won, far the fan favorite.
He won by default, and everyone was like, yes. Like, Jeff's literal tagline is dig deep, and Alex is like,
name of this podcast, digging deeper. Digging deeper, Alex. Gotta go deeper. I have to say real quick with the Andy thing, because you brought up Andy. I think they try to find Andy again, Andy from 47. They try to find him again because he did overcome. He had such a bad day one, day two, day three, and then he did end up finding his way and becoming an all-star caliber player. And I do think that they're trying to find that again with the types of people they're casting. It's just, if somebody's going to have a panic attack on day three, more often than not, they're not going to recover the way Andy did. More often than not, they're going to end
up
getting...
He's like the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, exactly. So that's that I kind of agree with. Blake, you said so much information there. Tony, was Alex versus RizGod really, really that bad?
Listen, RizGod, RizGod, baby, the man, the myth, the legend. I am all aboard the RizGod boat. And that the thing that clicked it for me is, I think RizGod, for as young as he is, I think he understands fully what he is doing. I think he is playing to a certain, I think he, what set it aside for me is when he went over to Alex's side and started like matching up his puzzle pieces. He's a moron. He cannot do puzzles. I get that. And I'm not sympathetic to that or empathetic to that. But when he started cheating, I was like, okay, the kid starts to get it. But the best part is when Alex comes back over and then RizGod goes to cheat again, he says two things. He's like, hey buddy, how you doing? And then he goes, oh, excuse me, let me get that. And like, that to me, I grew up with old Italian uncles who would always be poking you in the side. My uncle Ole around the dinner table would always find the youngest kid at the dinner table and just say their name. They'd be sitting there eating and suddenly go, Blake. And then you'd look up and he'd be eating his thing. So you don't know where the sound came from, just to pester. And RizGod to me is a pesterer. And I fell in love with that personality trait from him. Was it a superior experience? Did he deserve to be crying when his flag got raised? No, not at all. But did I love when he's coming back on the boat and he's raising the machete over his head like he's the sand people in Star Wars? Yes, I love that. I love that version of Rizzo. So I was entertained by it because I found Rizzo to be entertaining and Alex to be just I don't want to say any bad words on this show, but Riz to me sold it and I loved it because of that.
I agree with that. And I was saying last night, I'm looking for that standout player and people kept being like, what's RizGod, RizGod, RizGod. And then I'm saying, well, I'm also looking for the standout player who I don't also know is going to be playing on 50. Right. So I'm looking for the standout player who is not one of the two that we know are going to be standout players. I do agree. RizGod really did stand out for sure last night. And I think that Blake is over here as Nick Snyder, again, just taking shots at Blake, which is always my favorite. Blake just doesn't like Rizzo because Rizzo is not a sexy jacked alpha male like Blake's traditional favorites. But even like if Rizzo, RizGod is what we need for the show to start going in a little bit different of a direction with casting, I'm all about it. Look, still had a very similar storyline, at least with the same beats. Family grew up poor. My mom and dad immigrated here. We saw a lot of this on season 48. But we're seeing a unique character with that. And if that's what Gen Z is, and that's what the 20 somethings are going to be as we move forward, go in the direction of RizGod. Don't be going in the direction of, well, somebody who's just going to maybe get 5 or 6 confessionals throughout the entire season. And that's what we should hope for. So yeah, I agree with you, Tony. I think RizGod, when Alex laid on the table, and RizGod walked away, and then Alex walked away, and RizGod just immediately walked back. I said, all right, like this is a guy who's just there to like you said, pester. That's a great word. He's a pesterer. I like that. Yeah, I really do.
Love him.
So the other thing that I want to bring up here is the Yellow Tribe, because this frustrated me. I did a little Instagram thing where I was like, these are my 3 complaints. 1, it's too meta. 2, you know, what was the second one I said? I said it was too meta. I forget what my second one was. Oh, no, no idols was a problem, which we've covered. But I want to talk real quick about this Yellow Tribe. Why do we have 2 hours, 2 hours, and barely hear from anybody on that tribe other than Steven? Did that irk? I mean, Tony, you're nodding along, so I'll go to you first, because again, Blake's going to come in to probably punch somebody in the mouth. But what did that irk you as somebody who's watching this kind of for the first time? You haven't really seen many three tribe seasons either.
Mm-hmm. No, I have not. I will say, you're talking about how Blake wants to punch somebody. I don't think there's a more punchable face than what we saw out of Steven, and we saw so much of it. I only wanted to punch it more. No offense to the guy. I hope he's great. I hope his story's awesome. Like, I hope he, you know, lovely wife. I hope he gets everything he wants out of life. I didn't want to watch this guy on my TV at all. And watching his little interviews that he gave CBS beforehand, like the interviews he did with Parade Magazine and stuff. This man is a rocket scientist, one of the smartest people that is ever going to be on Survivor. And yet every word he says is a pun to space and rocketeering. And we'll see it throughout all of his confessionals. If I was introduced to Steven at a dinner party, I would have to leave the dinner party because I would get people mad by what I would be saying to him. I just despised him that much. So out of all the six people, because I know some of them, I've done research on all these people, so I know some of them really have stories to tell and could be interesting characters. Even Jason, who you guys said, you know, he came out as an alternate and he pulled the fabric off. I enjoyed hearing that because that's a storyline that, to me, I know television. I want to see what that comes out to be. Even he has a more interesting storyline than Steven. So out of all the people that we hung out with, Steven being number one, that's why I was nodding my head in disappointment, because I don't want to see the guy at all.
And so here's what's fascinating, right? Confessional count wise, I love looking at confessional counts. So Tony, this will be a big thing that as you're going through and you're watching, people will say this stuff all the time, but confessional counts are like my favorite thing. Rizzo, Alex, Jake, Sophie without the E, Jeremiah, Savannah. That is six people, all with more confessionals than the person with the most on Yellow. So the most on Yellow was Steven, who was tied with Jawan. So you're talking, he's tied for seventh. Then Nate and Shannon both come in. So this entire Yellow tribe of Matt, Jason, Christina, Sophie, MC, there are only two other people with as few confessionals as them on this season. Four of the bottom six of this episode where that tribe. And what bothers me about that, and you're watching Philippines right now, you are tipping your cap and letting us know that these people do not matter to the overall story of Survivor. You had 2 hours. It felt like it was dragging at times. There was plenty of story to tell with this Yellow tribe. Why didn't we get more from Christina? MC, I know Jason's an alternate. MC was also an alternate. Why didn't we hear more from MC? There's too much missing here from this Yellow tribe. And when you have 2 hours and nothing that monumental, nothing that confrontational, nothing that exhilarating happening, we were always going to get Rizzo versus Alex. That was always going to be one of the segments of the show because that is the try to earn your supplies challenge. Why did Yellow not get more screen time? And I just think that that is a problem. And I do think that's something that's missing because like Blake said, do I need to hear that? Alex is a political comms person for the fourth or fifth or sixth time. That's when we start to get annoyed with people, right? It's not them. It's why are we hearing the same thing about them over and over and over again? There has to be more to Alex than that. He's a political comms guy in Washington, D.C. I looked at my wife halfway through the second hour of the episode, and I turned to my wife and I said, do you think he lives in D.C.? Like, because that's all he kept saying. So, okay, Blake, what do you think about the Yellow tribe here?
It's very interesting to me of how does MC only have one confessional of like, is there nothing there? And that's just going to be more prevalent later. Or are we waiting? Like, is there too much traditional storytelling of we can't focus on a tribe unless they lose? Because we always transition from a challenge to a commercial. And then we come back from a commercial. And then there's the stakes of we just lost. And we just didn't have that for Yellow on either time because they crushed everybody. But we didn't really have a stuff of like, wow, our tribe is moving and grooving. Like let's do the powwow afterwards. Yellow comes in and does some foa foa stuff. Not foa foa. The a spot, not a spot. LaFleur stuff.
LaFleur.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, okay, they're moving and grooving. And like, Who's organizing that, or who's the most camp counselor of that, or how does Matt find that? Like, that's I don't like doing this, but I got to fit in. Like there's a couple confessionals there that I'm like, what happened? We had MC jump off of a thing and slam into a bell to be some crazy, like iconic shot. And it's like, do we have her talk about what was her one confessional about? I don't remember. And it's like, Christina's afraid of birds. And instead of that being endearing at this point, like, I think we can have a one for one comparing to one of our favorite people of all time. Sharif Fields is afraid of Leafs on Exile Island. Why are you on the show if you're afraid of Leafs? And it's like, there's Leafs over there. And some people are joking with her. But Christina is afraid of birds. Why are you on Survivor? Okay, did we get the same payoff that we got for Sari back in 2000? I'm pretty sure that was 2008. Do we get the same payoff with Sari that with Christina this time around? And it's no. And like, I'm trying to think of who are the people I want more of. Like, it's Christina, MC, and who's the third girl on their tribe? Like
Sophie with the E. Yeah, she didn't say anything.
So Sophie Segretti is her last name. And that was somebody that I think a lot of people were like, she's gonna flourish on the show. Mm-hmm. She's gonna be so fun to watch. And then it's like, I think whenever there's a mystery tribe, we have eight other seasons from the new era to look at of like, when they're not really focused on, they're not that interesting, or there wasn't something to show is more likely than like, I think that's the truncated version of there's only 26 days. I think that's the truncated version of we can't talk about idols because we're going to do something different. Like, 2 hours of not talking about idols over 2.5 days of actual footage, there isn't a lot to show off. And I think that's like Yellow. There was no conflict because we made our shelter immediately. We won every challenge and we're having a blast. It's like, okay, there's nothing to hear from them.
Yeah. And I think that's where we came out. Steven and Matt felt like the only two important characters from that tribe, in my opinion.
And you said you hate Steven and Matt has evil energy. Do you think it's having dreads as a white dude in Utah is like,
come on,
that's gotta be not evil, but it is, it's a very unique choice. And there was somebody on RuPaul's Drag Race that was a white guy that had dreads, and it was something where it was like, well, let's unpack that of like, why do you have dreads as a 50-year-old? I'd love that. That's something I want to hear. Of like somebody asking him, what's the idea about the dreads? What do you like about it? Is it easy? Do you not like getting haircuts? Have you saved $65 a year for 30 years now? Like, what's going on?
I don't know what it is. I make a lot of, obviously we're seeing these people for the first time. You're making a lot of snap judgments, and something about Matt irked me, and I'm staying true to it until I'm proven wrong. For instance, I was wrong on Shannon, the little yogi that does the meditation. I thought she was going to be an absolute easy first vote out type person, and it looks to me that she could actually be a real strong player in this. So I could definitely be wrong on my snap judgments. I ain't wrong about Matt. I think there's something wrong with that guy, and we'll see if I'm, we'll see what comes of it.
I think that Matt showing the restraint, I said this already, but him showing the restraint to not just jump in and do the fire and kind of let people figure out that he knew and come to him, I think that was a good positive. I could see Matt being the person who votes Steven out of the game, though. Like, I could see with what we saw where Steven's worried about people turning on him, I could see Matt saying, "Now let's boot this guy. He's starting to frustrate me. He's getting too paranoid and I don't have time."
One thought process real quick, because we'll probably jump away from this immediately. Do you guys find the words imposter syndrome interesting to watch at all in any permutation of it? Of like, whether they say they have imposter syndrome, whether they get over the imposter syndrome. I think imposter syndrome is definitely something that has been prevalent in like making a lot of people feel better about themselves. But like, imposter syndrome in reality TV is like, you're on the show for a reason. Go. Don't second guess yourself. Why fear instead of be confident?
I find myself watching these seasons, and for whatever reason, I am so much more interested in what happens on these 26 days than I am what happened to these people before the 26 days occur.
True.
Like, I want
We got there.
You know what I mean? Like, I want to see. You can tell me how the sausage is made later. Like, I want to see it's already done. Like, we're in the oven and you guys are forced to duke it out and figure it out. We'll figure out who's really messed up later and that'll explain things. So that's what I was watching. I get it now. I don't need to hear it yet, if that makes sense.
It's true. No, it shouldn't be episode one, episode two, episode three. It should be coming later in the season with the characters that we're a little bit more invested in about why, you know, you don't give the here's... If you watch a good movie, they don't spill every problem they have in the first 5 minutes of that movie. Like, oh, here's everything that's making me the way that I am. No, there's subtlety, subtlety, subtlety. And then you eventually get to what the root of everything is. And so I do think that that's, it's a good point. I agree that they give us too much about here's what happened. And then what starts happening. And again, this isn't like shade to these people's parents. It's just, we've heard on a lot of seasons now, my parents went through this, my parents went through that. Not only do I barely know you yet, I certainly don't know your parents. And so that is definitely...
There's not even a family visit to pay this off.
Like. Yeah, there's not even a family visit to pay this off, right? Like, imagine if there was a family visit on this season and it was Jake's dad coming out with glaucoma, knowing that this was going to be the last time he was going to be able to... Like, great. Like, that's the type of emotional stuff that we want to see on the show. So... I don't know what they do to kind of fix that. It seems like that's where they want to go all the time.
And I think there could be some energy. I'm big analogies today. Like, you're watching Alien and somebody's stopping after 10 minutes and going, here's how they did that special effect. And you're like, well, I kind of need to watch the whole movie first and I'll form my own questions. And then if I want to know this stuff, I could go afterwards and look at stuff. But I do think that's how some people enjoy media, is like stopping midway through and asking questions every 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. If you've watched a movie with anybody recently, of like, oh, how did that happen? And you're like, I don't know. I'm watching for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I think that takes it out of me of like, oh, I'm worried that I'm not going to fit in. Both Jawan and Steven's thing were like, tell me this on day 4.
Yeah.
Or like episode 3. Like, they're not even in trouble of going home. Like, why are we putting doubt? Oh, we're going to overcome this stuff. It's just how many people on this season are going to overcome something? Like,
yeah, everyone. That's the Survivor storyline now. It's all about overcoming and then gaining it. I understand.
I'm about to overcome my fandom at that point.
Yeah, and it's not overcoming something that's actually taking place on the season. It's overcoming something that happened off screen, which it's hard. Like, look, I just meet Tony now. If Tony were to, first thing he says to me is, oh, I went through this in my childhood. I'm like, all right, man, like, that doesn't affect how I'm really going to act around you on this podcast. Like, we're doing the podcast. I just met you.
I was 4'11 until junior year of high school.
That was crazy. Yes. That was crazy.
Good for him. I'm happy he grew. Hate that guy. It's probably because I just saw it, but like, even Jeff Kent in the Philippines, 17 year MLB player. I'm a huge sports guy. When I saw his face pop, I was like, Jeff Kent played Survivor. And he says on there, like, he's made 60 whatever million dollars in his MLB career. He's not here for the million. He's here to win Survivor. And that, to me, is a perfectly valid reason for you to be on the island. So, like, we don't need necessarily the overcome storyline. You can just be, I've watched this since I was a kid. And like Rizzo said it, I want to be on the Mount Rushmore. I want to be a Survivor legend. And that, to me, is reason enough for me to root or root against someone. So yeah. I don't need everyone's overcome story.
I love that. And Tony, I know you got to run here. So we'll wrap this up. Where can everybody find you and what's going on so that everybody knows? Because comments in the chat are loving Tony. So don't steal our fandom. But, you know, here they are.
I appreciate that. Some of the comments mostly have been against Blake, and I have known Blake as long as this interview has lasted. So I like Blake. So if you're coming to me to bash Blake with me, we're not going to be doing that. My name, though, is Tony Squares. I'm on Instagram, TikTok as Tony Squares. Just started a YouTube channel purely for Survivor with an hour long weekly episode that will be covering the weekly Survivor that's coming out. We're also going to have season long recaps when I eventually get to putting those together. So this YouTube channel is really my next step in blowing up my Survivor fandom, because as I've said on here, I've been on a journey recapping everything, hoping to catch up before we hit Survivor 50. And tomorrow, our first episode, our second episode's coming out. First, want to talk about the premiere, and I'm pretty sure you two are going to hate my guest, but some fans might love my guest because she played last year on season 48. It is the finalist herself. Eva Erickson will be joining me to break down the premiere of season 49. So I hope you guys are entertained by it. I know I will be, and I can't wait to get going. Yeah, Survivor Squared.
No hate for anybody from 48.
Hey, Eva, I had Eva on the podcast at the end of last season after her finale, and she's great. I love Eva. And Mitch is going to be my guest on Sunday. So look at that. We're getting all the 48ers right off the bat here. So, So thank you so much for stopping by, Tony. We appreciate having you on. Good luck with everything as you build up that YouTube channel. I hope that it explodes for you. And we're going to be over here begging for please like this video and subscribe to the channel, guys. That's what we want. John and McKenna will be live with Survivor Rewind tonight at 8:45 p.m. So check that one out. And I'll be live 10 a.m. on Sunday with Mitch. Become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. Jump in if you want to do our power rankings game. The link is now live for our top tier patrons. So if you want to be a part of that, you got to become a patron. Tegwith will be back on Monday, and she will be doing her Matt Chat episode, first one with Elaine. And that's it. Go check out Tony's stuff, and we will see you all next time.
See ya.